Welcome to the Buyer's Desk, your weekly resource for all things natural food retail.
This season, we're shaking things up with shorter weekly episodes to fit your busy schedule.
Each month, we dive into SPINS data, explore trends with industry leaders, spotlight emerging brands, and share actionable strategies to help you thrive.
Get ready to explore the world of natural food retail.
Hey, folks, and welcome to the Buyer's Desk. I am your host for today, Chris Sorensen. And today, we're pulling back the curtain on private label. At Infra, we experience this world through our Everyday program, which uses Caydia as its foundation. So if you don't know, Caydia is a control brand owned by our distributor partner, KeHE. And while shoppers see this as a trusted, value-driven brand, what they don't see is the complex work that it takes to bring those products to shelf and to keep them in stock. So joining me today are Linda Steelstra, Director of Operations for KeHE Exclusive Brands, and Tyler Hemming, Director of Sales Strategy. Together, they'll give us an inside look at the strategy and operations behind Caydia and why private label is maybe more challenging now than it ever has been before. Thanks, Linda and Tyler, for being here today. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Appreciate you having us here today.
Yeah, I think maybe what our listeners don't know is all the conversations that the three of us have with many others from our organizations on supply chain, you know, the Everyday program. I love to be able to take these conversations that we have, you know, weekly, monthly, and be able to share this with folks.
Yeah, we're excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the invite and glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, I think one thing to kind of just start things off, I'd just like to learn a little bit more on how you decide what categories Caydia should play in or pursue next and what type of data or insight guide those decisions of how you bring some of these brands to life within the Caydia brand.
We have a lot of different ways that we go about it. So I'm thinking about that. I'd say there's probably three ways that we decide whether or not to bring an item to market. The first one that I would say is that, you know, here at KeHE, our Caydia team calls on our CM team like any other maybe brand might. So we meet with our category managers once a year as on an annual time. And what we spend our time talking about is how is private label performing in the marketplace. So that's a little bit different than if you were a national brand coming in. We look at how is private label performing in this space. We take the distributor brands, we take the private label from SPINS, and we really kind of draw a picture and say, you know, here's a category where, you know, private label is really important. And in many ways, like through this process, we will decide that, hey, we are over-skewed or under-skewed in a category. So we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and an example might be something like beans. When you think about canned beans, private label really dominates about 30% of the sales in this category. So if you look at the Caydia brand a few years ago, we only had about 6 items and we beefed it up to 12. And it largely came from that category review process. We determined like, hey, in order for Infra and for some of our other partners to show up well in this category and have a private label offering, we really need to go wider here, which would be very different than another category where we might look at it and, you know, private label might have like a 10% share and then we'll have a different number of SKUs. So that's probably the first way that I would talk about. We keep evolving. Another thing that we've come up with this year is really a white space tool. So, you know, what I spoke about a minute ago was really good at talking about categories we're already in. This year, our internal team has come up with a white space tool that'll really look at what categories are we not playing in that are doing really well for private label. So that's been a bit of a game changer for us this year as we start to think about the space and think about, you know, where we should expand. So an example there, which we may or may not go down, is, you know, we use this white space tool. We have learned that, you know, like refrigerated hummus is huge for private label. It is a huge opportunity. There's a lot of competition in there. Using our old way of looking at it, we may not have identified it. Still doesn't mean that we'll necessarily roll those items out, but it's now we're looking into it. So that was one of the areas that we're looking at. Frozen pasta is another one that kind of popped up. Kombucha. So some of these categories that we traditionally wouldn't look at in our normal category review process, if that makes sense. And so I'd say, and then a third way is just, you know, requests. We get a lot of retailer requests. We get customer requests to look at different categories. Either we have competition that's doing well in it, or they think that we're missing something in the assortment. So kind of three different roads to get there.
No, that's great. And I think you've done a great job of listening to Infra's feedback, you know, with our membership providing, you know, all of their feedback when we do surveys, you know, with you guys to get feedback, or even when the Infra team provides a level of data and saying like, here are some things that we want to do or places where we shouldn't go based on the feedback we hear from our members. So I think we really appreciate the partnership in that as well. And that you guys have that third component of actually, you know, hearing the feedback. That's huge.
The tools that you guys have generated are fantastic. And I go back to like the paper program, right? We kind of came to you guys and the feedback, our data person was just blown away at the amount of information that came back. And, you know, from that, we did decide that we do want to go into like a bamboo. Unfortunately, got paused while tariffs and bamboo pellets, of course, come from internationally, and there's a lot there. But it was really exciting to see not only did people specifically go around answering the question at Infra, but, you know, the excitement that they had for some new area. So, yeah, we appreciate that.
Well, I think that's a good segue to talk about bringing a new product or bringing a product that was discontinued, you know, back to life. How does that look? Like when you're looking for a new supplier, what does the process look like? And I know you guys have to get quotes, you compare options. So like what kind of timeline are we talking about before, you know, you're doing all this research and then a product hits the shelf?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, you know, our ideal way of launching an item is really working from the SRP backwards. So, you know, an example would be, you know, thinking of the paper, like we know that we need to be competitive in order to be out there in that four pack roll. We need to be at a $4.99 or $3.99. And so it's starting with that retail, working our way backwards through the KeHE system and getting to the point where we know what our landed cost in the DC has to be. And at that point, we can bid it out to the different, you know, the different suppliers. I think the hardest part is understanding exactly when our volume is going to be. So for an established program like paper, that's pretty easy, right? We have an idea of what the volume is going to be. We can bid that out pretty quickly. Other programs are more challenging, right? We've never been in a different category. So I think of hash browns last year. We launched organic hash browns. You know, we had a number out there and we're doing really well with the program. But, you know, to date, we're only about halfway there on the volume that we expected. And so that creates some challenges when we're not quite hitting what we thought we would. So we start for a new item. We really try to start at that SRP. Like, where is the national brand? We want to be at least 20% less than them in an ideal world. And then we look at the competition. So what are some of these natural chain groceries retailing their private label for? We want to be able to, you know, be close to where they are and have that same value proposition. So nailing that down and then, you know, getting a logistics model that works. So it does vary. You know, sometimes we get lucky and we find the right supplier right away. Other times, you know, we have a category in mind. And I think of something like sugar and baking, you know, we've been trying to get that one right for a while. It's like, unless we can have that value proposition, you know, we don't want to launch the item, but we feel like that's a really big category for us to get into. But, you know, without the math working, there's no point going there. So yeah, that one takes a very long time. Paper was shorter.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I think too, that people don't realize that there's, okay, now you've got the price, you got the cost, you've got the bid. Then they have to run it and you have to have package designed and everything to be able to run it, to put it in the package that is the Cadia brand. So then you guys have to connect with the whole other like design team as well. Like there's a lot to bringing a product to life, right?
There is. Yeah. We're fortunate that we have our own design team here, you know, here in Boulder is where our office is for Cadia. So, you know, we've got our own internal design team and they're really good at hooking up with the suppliers and understanding like what are all their parameters to run and the label. But it is a long process. We obviously also have to include our legal and their legal in order to get there. You know, there's things on a package in the end that, you know, you need to make sure follow a lot of rules, as well as getting, you know, certification. So the certification process can take a while if someone's not there already. If they are there, it can still take a good amount of time. So yes, there's a lot of loops that go into it, but it's certainly fun when we get to that sweet spot and we've got the right supplier, we've got the right cost, we feel like we can make it through the supply chain, you know, getting all of the turns that we need. And, you know, when we finally see that product on shelf, there's no group more excited than ours.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I love seeing them too. And I like with the new rice that just came out, you know, I had a member reach out and I was like, hey, as soon as you got pictures of it on the shelf, send it. Because we want to see it on the shelf too. Yeah, yeah. It's a proud moment. So one thing when we're talking about the products, Tyler, I think this is something maybe you could lean into. You know, our members often ask about attributes like organic certification or sustainability in packaging, or just like how are we sourcing Caydia and how are we providing that on shelf? So how do you weigh in those factors when choosing suppliers or products or even packaging?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's a great question. Our focus as a brand is on sourcing organic certified products. You know, that's where we start. If organic doesn't really make sense, then we'll look at non-GMO certified. But organic's where we start and kind of work our way down from there. If you remember in the recent past, we launched the Caydia Everyday Tomatoes. Our focus kind of was on the pricing aspect of it compared to organic. And we learned pretty quickly that wasn't really what was resonating with the Caydia customer. So you know, since then, we've really kind of changed our emphasis onto organic certified. Now, we still launch items that aren't certified organic. And, you know, a lot of that kind of depends on whether the availability is there or if it's just not, you know, you just can't get it certified. So baking soda is kind of one of those things we're looking at where it just doesn't really exist. And as you know, we carry items outside of the organic certification. Granola, cereal, and kind of as we look to expand those, that could be some more that aren't necessarily, or where it's just way too expensive. Avocado oil, almond flour, those are the kinds of things where you got to keep that price point to a point where people buy it. And, you know, I think those are the factors that kind of drive in beyond the organic or non-GMO. We certainly look at fair trade where it makes sense and where we can influence that piece of it. And then, you know, kind of moving on to the packaging side, you know, a lot of times our voice isn't so strong. Just kind of depends on what the supplier's running, how the tooling is with the machines. And we kind of are beholden to what they have and what we can, you know, purchase from them or through them. But as Caydia grows, we can kind of influence that a little bit more. And, you know, someone with the smaller suppliers, we can have a little bit more say in exactly what packaging we want to hear. But you know, I think the important thing too is we hear the feedback from infra. We put a lot of weight on that in our decision-making process, and the infra voice is certainly echoing in our brains as we go through and you know, take a product through the life cycle of bringing it to shelf. So, you know, a lot of keep the information coming, keep the requests coming, because it impacts us.
Yeah, I think what I appreciate about what you guys done in that realm too is, you know, you've reached out and said, hey, we can do peanut butter cheaper if we do plastic. And, you know, when we heard from members, it's keep it in glass. Like if it's an extra dollar, you know what? Glass is more important. That differentiates us because our competitors are in plastic. So that's one thing that keeps us unique, you know, within a private label. And I know we even tried to work together on, you know, that barbecue sauce. And we got so close and, you know, and when it came to it, it's like we really wanted it in glass. The person we were partnering with really wanted it in glass and the price point just wasn't there. So we couldn't launch something that was organic, that was at a good price point, that was competitive and in the right packaging. So, you know, it's something I think we're always pushing for and striving for. And Linda, what I heard from you too, is sometimes we won't launch something and we won't even partner on a launch like this if we can't get it right and at the right price point in the right types of packaging that makes sense for, you know, the independent natural food retailer. So I really appreciate that about the thoughtfulness that you guys put into that.
Yeah, we joke that we kiss a lot of frogs before we find that prince on these. So yes, sometimes we go through a lot of just, you know, and sometimes it's a fantastic supplier. We just, you know, we can't hit their production runs or whatever it might be. So, you know, I think it's often just trying to find that perfect match for our brand and, you know, making sure that what we're bringing forward is going to be something that the retailers need and want on their shelf. Like we don't want to be in a situation where we're launching an item that, you know, our infra partners don't want to put on the shelf. We want to make sure that we've really done our due diligence and we have the right partner. So yeah, it can sometimes take a while.
And to expand on that piece of it, you know, just recently is last year, we put forth a lot of products that we were looking at going into production on. And we sent the survey out to you, Chris, and you got that into the hands of the retailers. And something we thought for sure everyone would come back like, yes, we want that. We need that in Cadia. It came back, the surveys came back like less than 50% wanted it. And it was, you know, something that internally we thought was a no-brainer. And taking that information, we ended up killing it in the process. So, you know, I think, you know, if you're out there as a member in for store listening, those surveys do drive decisions. So open them up and respond to them.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, one thing just kind of on that same point too, I think of, and this is what we talk about at Infra, that, you know, the one independent store by themselves has a small voice, but as a part of Infra, they have the voice, you know, of the collective and of the cooperative, right? And we had one member reach out and, you know, brought some stuff to our attention around the Cadia household product. What was this? About a year ago, and said, hey, we think we could do better. And we think we need to do better on the formulation. That one member reached out to me, Tyler, I sent that to you and Adam, that got to your team. And what now you guys are, I know we're still rolling out some of them, but that whole line has been revamped and is now bio-based certified. You guys found a new supplier and you expanded the line. Is that something you guys could talk about, that experience? Like, how did that all kind of transpire on your end?
Yeah, I mean, we think that we're really close to all these categories, but there's no one closer than, you know, the Infra members who are touching the product, talking to the customers, and you know, that insight really, really resonates with us. So yes, we ended up bringing that back. We are excited that the bio-based product is now rolling out. It is, you know, as you know, it's a process to get these changed over. It's a formula change. So, you know, making sure that the product's still performing, but yeah, we love those kind of insights from the team. And yeah, it is a success story. You know, it's not a new launch. It's not like on those laundry detergents. It's not suddenly a new UPC. It is rolling in, but it is rolling in now. So you'll start to see that on our packaging, you know, starting now. And, you know, we just appreciate that, you know, when we're missing something, that the folks are going to bring it to us and kind of hit us over the head with that. And I would say, you know, similar thing as we're looking at some of the sourcing, one of the bigger ones that we've talked about is, you know, with the tuna. So one of the things that we're going to be bringing forward is changing the labels so that we're making sure that we're telling people when an item is pull and line caught. So that's a big one that's going to be coming for us in January. We're going to have a yellow fin that we're going to be bringing, and there's other items that we're going to start stepping back from when we don't feel like the sourcing's where it should be. And I can say that one came from an Infra member as well. They're like, if this is pull and line caught, why aren't you saying it on the label? And we have changed our artwork. We're rolling that out like over the next 6 months. We buy those in containers, so it takes a while. But certainly the Infra voice is heard. We know it's not always immediate, but we are listening and we're excited to have that feedback.
That's awesome. I love that. So if we just talked about a lot of feel good stories. We know the supply chain and the private label is hard. And I know just from talking to you guys on a regular basis, you know, our members are seeing, you know, outages here and there, and it's challenging. But I think what the retailers don't see is all the things you have to deal with behind the scenes. Like you just talked about, tuna comes in a container. So it's not like we can make changes quick. Can you share some of the, like maybe even a few recent stories of the kind of supply chain curveballs that you've been dealing with sometimes on a daily basis?
They do seem to be coming in on a daily basis at the moment. You know, I think 2025 has been challenging with tariffs. I mean, when you think about organic items and you think about the items that we sell in Cadia, there's a lot of items that we sell that are not sourced domestically. You know, coconuts, there's no coconuts here. There's no pineapple here. So you think about the number of items that, you know, we have global partners in order to bring these items in. And, you know, with the tariffs this year, it's been extremely challenging for just the business world to know what's coming. And then, you know, if you have any sort of supply chain disruption that happens on top of that, it makes it doubly hard. So I know you had asked me about this one. You know, one of the ones I was thinking about was, you know, coconut oil. So think about coconut oil, those are coming in. Suddenly the tariffs on the Philippines and Thailand, you know, they were saying 40 and then 30. And I think we ended up at 20. But in the middle of all that, you know, we had some oil that was coming in and multiple containers that came in and it didn't pass QA. It didn't hit the spec, which happens in the world. But then you add tariffs and you add the supply chain and you add all these other parts. And suddenly, you know, you have a bit of a crisis happening. So I think it is challenging right now. Our global partners are challenge to figure out what we are doing here in the States, especially as those things have been changing and we've been, you know, really trying to hold hands with some of our partners in order to get through this. I think we're in a better spot now. It feels like the tariffs have kind of settled and then we're going into fourth quarter. But, you know, we are aware of the challenges that are happening between labor and tariffs and supply chain. And so we are working hard to make sure that we are adding some buffer, particularly on some of our international items, but as well as our, you know, our core list. So we're trying to figure out the infra core list. You know, we went through maybe about 30 days ago and we started to beef up how much safety stock we're having, just knowing that these challenges are going to keep coming and we need to give ourselves a little bit more of a buffer on it.
Yeah, no, I think this is what the retailer wants to hear though, because, you know, a shopper comes in and is like, there's not beans on the shelf. And the retailer goes, Kehi, Kadia, why aren't my beans on the shelf? How long is this going to be? And then you guys are going back to your supplier, like, why aren't we getting the beans? And there's a whole lot more to this than just, you know, the retailer feels, I don't have beans, I can't sell beans, I'm losing sales. But there's a whole story behind that of why the beans aren't on the shelf. And so I think anywhere where you could give us some of the examples and let us know, like, you know, here are the real things that are happening in the world, that empowers the retailer to come back to their shopper and give them that advice or that news, right? Because that's, I think, especially at the independent natural food stores, our communities come to us because we can educate. We know what's going on. We're in tune with the products and the ingredients. So hearing from you guys about that, I think, is an important piece of the retailer puzzle.
Yeah. I mean, I think in many ways we live in this world of, like, you know, don't tell me your problems, just fix it. So I think that that's what we spend a lot of time doing. But we appreciate, you know, your interest in understanding what's happening. Because, you know, like last week, one of the examples that we had would be our pasta sauce supplier. They had an international organic ingredient that came in, shorted, same problem, like suddenly they can't do their production run. And they're behind, so it creates a bottleneck. And so we have really great partners, you know, who are telling us what's happening and they're looking for solutions. But there's certainly, you know, supply chain challenges that come in. And I would say more than anything, it is being affected by how, you know, there's not a lot of our organic items are not made in the States. I mean, that's part of the world that we live in, is that organic farming is harder, right? So there's a lot of product that ends up coming in from other countries. And so we are trying to just make sure that we have those buffers in place and that we are not so tight that you guys feel every time that there's a supply chain blip along the way. And hopefully you don't have to have all those conversations with your customers.
I certainly don't envy Linda and her team what they have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, because I mean, some of the things that we've dealt with, Linda, have been natural disasters, you know, happening that aren't getting the products in. You know, we've had a supplier that had a plant explosion. We've had some lot of interesting, how do you say, out of all the interesting things that have popped up that have, like, complicated the supply chain, what are the one of the most, like, interesting or, like, shocking things that you're like, oh, I would have never expected that to happen?
Well, certainly the fire was a big one. I mean, unfortunately there's some sad stories that went with that one. So, you know, it's tough when you're in a situation when you're, you know, trying to get your production, you're trying to get your supply and you realize that there's actually, you know, fatalities that happen because of something. It changes your mindset, right? Like in the end, we're all human. It's like, okay, yes, I need this product, but at the same time, this is not the biggest problem, but it's the biggest problem because my customer has an ad and I'm expected a truckload. So I think the humanity of it all is part of it. You know, you talked about the beans. That was a strike that everyone thought was going to last, you know, 4 weeks, and have ended up going on, you know, almost 12. So I think that the hard part with some of these situations is just, you know, you think that you see the light at the end of the tunnel, and then, you know, things that are out of your control are happening. And so we're trying to proactively communicate. But in many situations, we can't necessarily say what the end is. But, you know, we do pride ourselves on, you know, having close partnerships with our suppliers, you know, partnering with them the best they can when these situations are arising. But at the same time, you know, holding firm, like, we know that production is happening, in making sure that we're getting our fair share. You know, Kehi has been through challenges. I go back to COVID and all the challenges that were there. We try to make sure that we're picking partners that understand that our supply chain is just as important as some of the biggest people out there. And we try to gravitate towards those suppliers so that when things do get challenging, we're at least part of the conversation. We're at least getting our fair share and we're able to, you know, come together and make a plan. So I don't know if there's a great story, Chris. There's so many weird ones at the moment.
I think the thing I hear from you on that too is, you know, you guys are a B Corp. Infra is now a B Corp. We just announced that this early October. And as a part of B Corp, it's, you know, there's so much within your business itself, but it's also how you treat and account for your supply chain and your partners in that. And hearing that you guys also, you know, take that into account when you're dealing with your supply chain partners, I think is huge for retailers to understand that, yes, we may have an ad, we may have something where we need the product, but there is so much of the humanity that we care about the people that are working on the farms. We care about the people that are putting this product in the packaging and getting it to our stores. So we have to have that level of empathy and humanity within the supply chain as well. Like, I think that's something we need to consider. So I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront.
Yeah, we know in the end you want it on yourself, but yes, honestly, and I think it's just been a little bit of an unprecedented year. Like, I've been doing private label more years than I want to say. And it's just been one of those years that it feels like, you know, there's a lot of challenges. And I think a lot of it comes from labor tariffs and it's all just kind of getting tough. And at the end of the day, our biggest goal is to make sure that our suppliers know where we're going. We've had unprecedented growth with Infra. You know, when you look at Cadia and if you're pulling a SPINS report, you will see that we're growing about 20, 25, 30%. And in many cases, you know, when we used our crystal ball to say how many, you know, apples that we wanted or how much, you know, we wanted for the crop, you know, we might not have guessed it completely right. So those partnerships that we have with these suppliers that we've had for a very long time, it goes a long way. Like, we know that we get more than our fair share when things go a little bit astray. But yeah, it's all about how we treat people through the challenging parts as well as the good times. So we try to just over communicate with them. And, you know, I think maybe your Infra partners would be a little bit surprised, like how much we put into trying to make sure that the supply chain is perfect, especially when it's not perfect.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And I guess another question just in that realm is, do you, you know, 2025 has been an unprecedented year. Do you see things getting more stable, or do you think this is the new normal for private label, at least for the, you know, foreseeable future?
I mean, I do think it's going to stabilize. I think, you know, what we are trying to do right now is get ourselves in a good spot. You know, we're all going into our fourth quarter, which of course is the busiest time of year. So we're trying to give ourselves some cushions. We're trying to be aware of what's happening around us. But at the same time, you know, we don't expect that, you know, next year all the tariff numbers will change again. Like, we do think that there's going to be some stability coming. And I think that we're all just learning how to get through this, right? So how do we price? How do we forecast? How do we do all these things? This year, there was some surprises, but we think that there is some light at the end of the tunnel and that, you know, we should be getting some stability back.
Well, that's great to hear. Let's cross our fingers and hope.
I know, right?
That's the 2026 projection we need. Yeah. Okay, so I think to kind of finish off this conversation, you know, I was on the retail side for a long time, and I've learned so much from you guys working at Infra on what it takes to put a private label brand together and bring these items to the shelf. What's something that's maybe happening behind the scenes on private label that we have not covered yet that retailers probably never think about and would be surprised to learn?
You know, I think really just the importance of private label in certain categories. I mean, every year, you know, there's the reports about private label and how people are, you know, looking at their dollars and trying to figure out where to spend. And it just feels like it's an area that's going to continue to grow. But I think what sometimes surprises even our own group, because we have, you know, such a small group that's focused on Cadia. We have a kind of a big and mighty team. You know, the private label share in certain categories really does you know, it dominates. And so like when I talked about that bean example earlier, I know that when I get a new category manager, not the person now, but if I get a new category manager, often they're surprised. You know, they have a lot of the brands coming in and talking about their share and their importance and what have you. And then when you peel away parts of the onion and you're like, actually 30% of this is private label, you know, you often get the big eyes. So I don't know if that will surprise your group. I know that they are in the store every day and they're talking to customers and they're seeing their rotation. But I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes what we take for granted a little bit, sometimes will surprise people on the branded side.
Yeah, I think that holds true, because I think what we do on shelf is we support a lot of local brands, a lot of regional brands, a lot of our, you know, national organic or even regional indie owned brands. And then, you know, we have the other bigger brands out there that are your corporate owned brands that are on our shelf. And we've spent a lot of years behind these brands, you know, because that's been our differentiation. And, you know, I think we're seeing, you know, some of that share going to private label. And so for us, you know, that's where we had to kind of respond to this maybe later than we should have with the Everyday program, to be able to give our members, you know, that option to bring those shoppers back in the store and a reason to have them come in for some affordable products. So I think you're not wrong there that, you know, if you haven't leaned into it and haven't seen it, you know, I know that we're seeing members, we could list off a handful of them that are seeing, you know, beyond that 30% growth month over month, year over year. But as a collective, you know, that's what we continue to hope to do with you guys is continue that growth while still supporting, you know, the local and the indies and the stuff that still differentiates us. Well, great. Well, I appreciate you guys being on the show. I hope that folks learned a thing or two about, you know, kind of the behind the scenes of private label. Really enjoyed the stories that you guys shared and would love to have you back again at some time to talk about how great the supply chain has been over 2026 or whatnot or whatever else transpires.
We'll do a big relap in January, right?
Yeah. But yeah, just really, truly appreciate your partnership and appreciate how much effort you put in to this work for the Infra member, for the independent retailer, and how much you really take this partnership, you know, seriously. From the feedback and everything, it's huge for us. Yeah, so thank
you. We absolutely do. We appreciate you and we appreciate you having us on today. Yeah, we spend, you know, day and night thinking about how we're going to make sure that we're executing. So, you know, we appreciate having this time to talk about what we're doing and for Infra's interest.
Excellent. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris, and appreciate it, and definitely would like to come back.
Some ingredient lists read like a science experiment. Ours will make you drool. We're unreal, and our chocolate snacks are basic in the best way possible. Made with simple, 100% real ingredients and just enough sugar to satisfy any sweet tooth. Unreal has fixed your favorites. Peanut butter cups, dark chocolate almonds, milk chocolate gems. And yeah, they taste even better than the originals. The result? Shoppers try Unreal, then they come back for more. More flavors, more formats, more excuses to stash another bag in the snack drawer. Unreal isn't just better for you. It's better, with mind-blowing taste and a bit of a cult following. And this time of year, let's just say the candy aisle's having a moment. Unreal is what candy should be. Unjunked, uncomplicated, unfreaking believable. Come see what the hype's about at unrealsnacks.com.
As we wrap up this episode of The Buyer's Desk, we'd like to extend our heartfelt thanks to the incredible Infra staff, contributors, dedicated independent retailers, and visionary natural food brands and business partners that made this episode possible.
Stay tuned for more inspiring insights and stories in the world of natural food retail. Until next time, thank you for your support. Angela Bozo, co-host and administrator.
Chris Sorensen, co-host and producer.
Kim Rout, executive producer and segment contributor.
Jim Olson, Spins segment manager.
Austin Hinkle, audio engineer.
Sarah Super, wellness strategist.
Madeline Ware, marketing writer, editor, and digital manager.
Haley Craig, audio engineer and segment contributor.
Raina Kittredge, segment contributor.
Bella Sislo, outreach manager and segment contributor.